Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Everybody, happy Friday to you. It's a Chiefs win last night in a thriller. What a way to open the NFL season. Excuse me. Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester here with you to help break it all down. The Royals back in action. We got a big weekend of college football. We got a big night of high school football as well tonight. It's all coming for you over the next 2 hours. And we appreciate you being here with us on KFH. Being with us on our video streams as well, Facebook, YouTube, X, and of course on 12 News Connected. We'll be joined a little later by Paul Savage, 12 News' TJ Cleland and Brandon Zinner for picks. And then we'll have TJ, who's watching over Ketchikansas right now these days, will stick around and help us with some high school football previews as well. It is a packed show. The Royals, of course, back in action. It is it's a big Friday, maybe a little sleepy Friday for Chiefs fans today. Tommy, how are you this morning?
And I'm good. You know, you mentioned sleepy. I mean, I think that's the name of the game right now. You know, went late last night, of course, and you had a delayed kickoff because of weather in the Kansas City metro. And, you know, you wait so long for the NFL season to kick off and then you got to wait a little bit longer. But it was worth it in the long run. And it's just a fun night of football and glad to be here today.
So we had my wife, who is the luckiest person on the planet, won a little thing to be able to watch the game at a restaurant here in town. So we had like all our kids, parents, and everybody in the kids, so the kids could all watch and everything. And then, of course, it's a school night and everything starts a little later. And I'm like, oh, this will be good. My kids were zombies this morning, but it was worth it because we got an incredible game, Tommy. And like, we have fully established here the absolute rivalry that is Chiefs Ravens. You had a couple of Ravens running their mouths a little bit after the game. You had Mahomes getting shoved on the sidelines on some late stuff. And like all of that, you know, bleeds into a fantastic finish by a fraction of an inch of a 2-point conversion, you know, for the win for Baltimore. Like all of these things played in and there's just, you know, at the front of it all, it was as good a game as we expected. Of course, it's right on the line, depending on where you bet it on the over-under, which site you used, all that kind of stuff, and goes down to the wire as we anticipated it would. I don't remember where you picked on it, Tommy. I took the Ravens and the points last week as far as our picks went, but I said the Chiefs would win but not cover the number. And that, you know, that was going to happen if Isaiah Likely was, you know, a toe shorter on that end line. Just an incredible, like, so much fun. I'm so glad football's back. Like, I'm just so glad football's back.
You know, it wasn't perfect by any means. There was some rust for sure. No. There was absolutely some fatigue, I think, especially defensively for the Chiefs late in the game. You could tell that guys like Chris Jones and George Karlaftis were gassed that final drive that Baltimore had. And it came down to the wire. I think that we will probably see sharper football as the season progresses. Isaiah Likely, by the way, you mentioned, you know, the play that ultimately decided the game. And then you mentioned the way that, you know, some of the players for the Ravens talked after the game. One of the things Isaiah Likely said at the podium after the game was that for the Ravens, that's the worst that they're going to play all season. And so if that was the best that the Chiefs have got, then it's going to be a struggle for them. And like, well, you clearly haven't watched the Chiefs over the last decade because that's not the best that the Chiefs are going to play this season. They were shaking off some rust. It wasn't always pretty. There were some penalties that, you know, Mahomes threw a pick and, you know, there were some things that weren't, you know, outstanding for Kansas City, but that's by far not the best effort that they can do. And they still won the game. They still covered the number. I know it came down to the final play, but they still covered that number. I took them. I laid the points last week, and I just had a hard time thinking that they were going to go back-to-back years losing the season opener at home like they did last year with the Lions. So ultimately, it ended up working out well for the Chiefs. A lot to dissect and digest from the game last night, but you know, overall, they start off the season the way that they needed to.
Yeah, look, by the way, the Ravens also were not the best that they'll be this year. It's week one. There probably aren't any NFL teams that are the best that they'll be. At least you hope not if you're coaching staffs. But yeah, the defense, look, Lamar Jackson made mistakes late. He missed some throws, but he was really good at the same time. The Chiefs let him probably have too much with his legs, but you're talking about the defending MVP now with, you know, Derrick Henry to account for back there at the same time. Those tight ends are going to be deadly, both of them together. It's a formula that the Ravens are going to be really good at the end of this season, but the Chiefs didn't even have Hollywood Brown in that game. So, you know, I thought the defense, even though I know they gave up 450 yards, which is way, way too much, but I would not say I was disappointed in the defense by any means. You know, that first touchdown drive was aided by some, you know, big third down conversions, penalties, things like that on the defense. If you look at it, almost felt like one of the old school bend don't break defenses of Spags, right? That's what it felt like to me, is what they were doing. But I think there's a lot of upside in the defense too. There is clearly upside in the Chiefs offense when Hollywood Brown comes back into the mix. I mean, we saw why they drafted Xavier Worthy, right? We saw it. Two touchdowns, one running, one passing. Dude's electric. That's fine. But wait till you see Hollywood Brown jump in there with Rashi Rice. That's what I kept. I was like, man, I think I tweeted this last night. I was like, good luck, everybody. Like, that's the Chiefs without Hollywood Brown. Good luck in the games that he's there. It was, you know, Kelsey was non-factor, really, and it didn't matter. And that's what I think, like, the biggest takeaway of everything we saw last night, that's what stood out to me the most. Kelsey's a non-factor. Hollywood Brown's not even playing in the game, and they were able to put up 27 points on what will end up being one of the top defenses in football, you know, top half at least. Like, their offense is just, their offense will be an absolute juggernaut when healthy this year. Kingsley Suamataya got beat at least once, but I thought he was at least as good as what they've had there.
He was better. He was by far better than what they had. The thing about Suamataya that stood out to me, yeah, he did get beat once or twice, but his athleticism, I mean, he was blocking downfield 10, 15 yards that we just don't see, at least we haven't seen in a long time, from a Chiefs offensive lineman. I saw some people on social media last night comparing him, not his overall skill level, but at least his athleticism, to Eric Fisher and what Eric Fisher was able to do for a number of years in the being able to block downfield, being able to hang with you know, some of those defenders that maybe are not even defensive linemen, that maybe traditionally could get a step or two on an offensive lineman. He was hanging with them for the most part. He's a rookie. There are going to be some growing pains. There are going to be some missed assignments and things like that. But, you know, I was concerned. I'll be honest. I was concerned about what that would look like for him as a rookie starting game number one. And those concerns went out the window just because I think he's got the athleticism and can mature into being an incredibly effective left tackle. I understand now why the Chiefs were so enamored with him, drafted him, and then ultimately gave him the starting role.
They evaluate offensive linemen well. I mean, we know that. Not necessarily in the free agent market, but rookies and college players, that's just a position they have done well with. And yeah, I'm with you. His upside is clear, and he'll grow into it a little bit, but feel better about that position than you have in a long time, probably. I'll tell you my biggest area of concern, that Chris Jones kept lining up on the end, which tells me they don't have a lot of confidence opposite George Karloftis. Which tells me, if you don't have Chris Jones, a defensive tackle, like, we've played this game before. Chris Jones is a far more effective defensive tackle than he is when he lines up on the edge. And that should have been a place to attack with all the new faces and the changes on Baltimore's offensive line. Like Chris Jones, that's a game where you need him in the middle just wrecking things. He's on the end, and I didn't like it. And I don't know that that's what the Chiefs ultimately will do all the way through, but it just tells me they don't have confidence on the other side from Karlaftis. That will be something to watch this year. Now, they're not always going to play Lamar Jackson, for sure, right. But it's still a concern.
Part of it was, trying to contain Lamar Jackson in the pocket, which is easier said than done, and Jackson scrambled and ran like crazy in that game, and the Chiefs didn't really have a good answer for that. But I think a lot of it was trying to keep him from, getting outside and then, being able to advance the ball.
That's not Chris Jones' job in a perfect world.
You're totally right on that. But I think they felt like it might be a little bit more likely to happen if it's Jones on the edge as opposed to Felix and Udike Uzomah. Look, I said this going into the season. It's put up or shut up time for Felix and Udike Uzomah. The Chiefs use a first-round pick on him, and with the expectation that he will, and I think everybody knew he was going to be a little bit of a developmental project coming in, but they use him in the first round. They use the first-round pick on him. He needs to be starting, on the edge in that regard and being a game wrecker. And he did, strip a sack or strip a fumble at one point in the game, I believe, if memory serves. So he had
a fumble recovery.
Yeah, he had a fumble. Like he did some good things in the game, but consistently, I think that you're spot on when you say they felt like the more effective play in that particular game was Chris Jones on the edge, opposite of Karlaftis. I do think that once Charles Omenihu comes back from that injury, I think that they'll feel more confident in him and other players on the edge as opposed to Chris Jones. But that's not where Jones is the most effective and where he has, where he has made his money over the course of his career has not been on the edge.
No, they've done this before, right? We saw, what was that, 2 years ago when they were like, all right, we're going to line him out. And it just never seemed good. So we'll see what that does over time. I think, grand scheme, there wasn't going to be anything in a game like that I look at and say, oh my goodness, we got a problem here. You beat the Ravens. The Ravens are maybe the second best team in the conference. I think that will hold true. And you created some drama for a likely rematch with them later in the season. Perfect. Perfect way to start the NFL season.
I will say offensively for Kansas City, and we talked a little bit about Xavier Worthy and what he brings to the table. I mean, everybody knows the speed, and that was on full display, especially on that first touchdown. By the way, I mean, giving credit where credit is due, it was the coverage was busted, on that play. So, that was a great, play by Worthy.
But the run, it wasn't.
The run, it wasn't for sure. I mean, that speed was on full display for sure from him, and he'll be a game changer and already is a game changer for Kansas City. And Rashee Rice became kind of the consistent security blanket. He was that towards the end of the season last year. You add in Hollywood Brown as another threat to just take the top off of the defense, and then all of a sudden you've got a multi-layered, at least passing game. And I'm sure that, Mahomes, and we've seen this throughout the offseason, is just salivating at the opportunity to have the full complement of wide receivers. On top of that, Isaiah Pacheco looked outstanding. And I know there was a period of time, that I think he got a little bit banged up, and we're going to see that throughout the course of the season. He took a few plays off or whatever, and you could see the distinct drop off. And Samaje Perine, I think, can complement a little bit, but he's not going to be a game changer. Carson Steele got a little bit of action. He's probably not going to be a game wrecker necessarily either. So it's really Pacheco or bust, and they leaned on him too. And so when you've got that additional threat in the backfield that can get you first downs, again, that's going to soften up that defense. So it's multi-layered. It's balanced as far as the talent is concerned, both running and passing the football. And so on a night that Travis Kelce really was kind of quiet, they still had significant threats and weapons for Mahomes. And seeing that in week number one and then knowing that Hollywood Brown will be returning soon, just it makes you that much more excited about what this offense can do.
Good luck is what I said. And it looks like they have somebody that can protect Mahomes. So good luck. I don't know when you're a defense what the play will be. Normally you'd say, well, they got to get a good pass rush.
Yeah.
Now you add that in. It is. And again, I don't think the defense will be as good as it was last year, but it doesn't need to be.
I don't think so either.
This offense is going to be lights out.
I saw people that have, you know, on social media last night starting to try to, even after just, you know, 1 week, comparing this Chiefs team potentially to the team in 2019 that had a terrible defense, but an explosive offense. And, you know, they're, you know, scoring 40, 50 points a game, but they're giving up 30 or 40 points a game. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be quite that bad. I don't think we're going to see that big of a disparity between the offense and the defense, but there were some concerning things. They couldn't contain Lamar Jackson. That's easier said than done. Derrick Henry was pretty effective early in that game. Of course, we already mentioned Isaiah Likely and what he was able to do. There were, you know, some plays in the secondary that they clearly missed Legarius Sneed, although Jalen Watson, I think, had some nice moments. I think they missed Willie Gay Jr., but Leo Chenal had some really good moments too. So they're going to come into their own, I think, defensively as the season progresses. I think there's a middle ground between the defense that we saw a year ago, the McDuffie and Sneed duo in the secondary, and the 2019 defense, which was Swiss cheese. Like, there's a good middle ground, and I think that's probably where the Chiefs defense will ultimately end up.
It is going to be fascinating to see, because, you know, yes, I think the capabilities of the offense could get up there like the 2019 team. I also think they don't want to play football that way. So that will be interesting. They can do it, but do they want to? Because it does put your defense in a bad position too. Like, that's, you know, you want to score as many points as you can, obviously, but I also think they will have some desire to lengthen drives and do those kinds of things and keep the other team off, especially when you're playing a team like Baltimore, right? So a lot to get into. We are just scratching the surface on the Chiefs' big win last night. When we come back, we'll get you a little audio from the game last night. We will continue to look at this. We'll get to some of the drama that came off after the game from the Ravens locker room, which I'm here for all of it. And then we will also talk some Royals as well in this hour. We've got picks coming up a little bit later. TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner, Paul Savage will join us for our second week of picks. We'll also talk a little high school football on the Catch of Kansas side in the second hour as well. Your calls are welcome at 869-1240 on the IHOP hotline. It is open for you at the moment. Brought to you by IHOP with all-you-can-eat pancakes through September 15th. And don't forget about the Odyssey app either, by the way. PJ Glasser, our betting insider yesterday, popped on. And if you want to go back and listen to that from the weekend, might be a good idea.
I'll make you some money.
Go in. So I pitched to him, hey, what about a worthy first touchdown dart throw? Feels good. Maybe Mahomes wants to use his new toy. He said, yeah, I like that as a dart throw, but the first touchdown can get a little chalky. So he's like, I kind of like a chalky one, but why not do that on the first Chiefs drive or something? Both of those hit, right? Like, the under, if you got it at 47.5 hits, like, go to the Odyssey app, check it out. You can always go back and listen to our great segments. So just FYI on that. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a little more about this Chiefs game, including some game audio. Don't go away. Sports Daily continues right after this.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Colin Hux Power Washing.
Hit the Grand Slam Jackpot with BetMGM. Score a $50,000 bonus bet jackpot with a player you bet on to hit homer slugs a Grand Slam. Simply head over to BetMGM and place a home run prop bet during this weekend's games.
What a wild environment down there. It was two heavyweights in a fight right down to the end. And when they say it's a game of inches, it might be shorter than that.
All this football coverage on KFH presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits. Still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. That's it. That's how the game ends. An incredible game back and forth. Looked like the Chiefs were in control and then they weren't. And the Ravens were that close. It was a toenail if you were watching that, you know, Isaiah Likely missed that touchdown by now. They still would have had to make their 2-point conversion because John Harbaugh indicated they were going to go for it, which I have no problem with. I think that's fine. When you got Lamar Jackson, I don't think that's bad strategy. But it's, man, what a great and perfect way to start the NFL season. And then it got even better after the game. I wake up to all the post-game you know, stuff and Isaiah Likely, and we mentioned it and saying, you know, if that's the best the Chiefs have, we'll see him in the postseason. And then Roquan Smith getting mad at Peyton Hendershot for giving him a little, he called it a shove. I went back and watched it. That's a little dramatic there, Roquan Smith, after a clearly late hit. I mean, he like tapped your shoulder pad, but whatever. Whatever motivates you, man. It's interesting.
He was a little dramatic about that, and you know, he was also the guy that said that Mahomes flopped, and that's why there was the no call on that penalty. Called it a flop, and I'm like, but then you're getting upset about a little gentle tap on the shoulder. So whatever, you know, dramatic.
And I love it.
I love it because
they're mad.
They are.
They're big
men. And you know, Lamar Jackson historically has not performed well against the Chiefs. And, you know, this has become a rivalry outside of the division. It's a rivalry in the AFC. I think Chiefs-Ravens have become, you know, kind of what Chiefs-Bengals had been for a few years. And I think the Ravens are now the clear threat in the AFC for sure against the Chiefs. And the Bengals are still right there, don't get me wrong. But, you know, really that's become kind of the class competition, that matchup, Chiefs-Ravens in the conference.
There's a lot of drama in it, right? Mahomes and can Jackson ever catch him or beat him and all that. It's not just that. The Ravens will be there in the end. But yeah, I think the Bengals will be there in the end. We'll find out Monday if the Jets will be there in the end. I'm not counting out the Bills yet. Houston, the upstart Texans. Like, there's a lot of teams in the AFC. It's just this one is a rivalry. Is that, you know, are ultimately these the two teams, the best teams in the AFC? I mean, it's obviously way too early to say that. I think, you know, the Chiefs, you can say that about, but we're going to see a lot of really good teams in the AFC. This is one of them. This has become this great storyline. We'll see it again with the Bengals. Joe Burrow's healthy this year. You know, and unlike Lamar Jackson, he has to some degree had Patrick Mahomes' number a little bit. You know, we haven't really seen a Chiefs Texans rivalry have the opportunity to blossom, but it's all there for us, and it's going to be an incredible season. Cole wants to chime in on the IHOP hotline on that Chiefs game last night, 869-1240. What's up, Cole? Welcome into Sports Daily.
Well, hey, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well.
I just wanted to say, I think we might have watched the game of the year so far. I mean, game of the year. How are you going to call
it? It has been
game?
The game of the year, Cole. It has been. You're correct.
It is the game of the year, but I don't know how you're going to top that game. I mean, it was so close. And so good. I was like so happy, so mad. I almost spiked my phone when I thought they scored that touchdown there at the very end. And then I find out that his toe was on the line and he's out of bounds. And I'm just thinking to myself, oh my, thank goodness. But no, I had a question too. I was thinking already, I'm thinking for the draft next year. Of course, you've got, like you mentioned, so many offensive weapons now. I would assume we would take defense when we go into the next draft. Do you take a pass rusher or you take somebody for the secondary or what would you take?
Well, if we're getting that predictive, based on what we saw through week one, it'll be a pass rusher. But,
yeah.
You know, it's way, way, way too early for that. Healthy. We got to see, you know, Kings of Sumatai take on some of the elite ends in this league. Like there's a lot still needs to be determined on all of that. But it's if you're looking and we're trying to be that predictive, I would say yes, it will be a pass rusher.
Yeah. I didn't know if it'd be somebody to replace with Ladarius Sneed or something, try to get that built up a little bit better, you know.
Could be, and that's a good point. We appreciate the call, Cole. It brings us into a good point, Tommy. What did you think of the new look secondary?
Yeah,
I thought they handled themselves fairly well. If you look at, you know, the two receivers, the big receivers for Baltimore, which would be Flowers and Bateman, they did a great job against those two. Those two were targeted 15 times. They only caught half of those and held them to under 100 yards. They struggled with the tight ends, which would be more on the linebacker/safety. So look, without looking at the all 22s, and we'll have to, you know, trust maybe Dan Israel on that, like to like specifically make those kinds of designations in the secondary, I'm not sure yet. I think it was okay. Like I thought they did a pretty good job. I know McDuffie was, you know, great as usual, making that big play on a third down where they tried to swing it around and he makes an open field tackle. So I think fine. I think good. You know, all things considered, through one test, that was pretty good. Let's see how they handle the Bengals. Let's see how they handle some of these other elite receivers. But I thought it was pretty good.
I thought the defensive backs were outstanding last night overall. And what's going to be different this season, I think, at least early on, is that you're not going to see it was Legarius Sneed's job permanently last year alongside and opposite Trent McDuffie. So it was those two, and or really bust. You're going to see a rotation of players, I think, early on in that, you know, other cornerback role that Legarius Sneed vacated. And so it's not going to be a consistent one player. It's going to be a rotation, and it might be matchup dependent. I think we saw that a little bit last night. I mentioned Jalen Watson in the first segment. I thought he played great. I think Brian Cook shows that he's got speed to be able to hang with, you know, even the top elite receivers in the league. And then from, you know, a safety type role and position. I mean, of course, we know what Justin Reed can do, but Shamari Connor had a really good game too. There were, you know, a few open field tackles that those guys made that I thought were outstanding. And really, like, you want to point to an issue outside of Leo Chenal. I don't think the linebackers had a particularly good game. You know, you think back to that broken play on that final drive, the play that really set up the touchdown that was overturned at the very end, and it was that busted coverage, wide-open play to Rashad Bateman that I think gained 40 yards or 35 yards, whatever it was. That was Nick Bolton. That was not a secondary issue. That was Nick Bolton, you know, kind of blowing the coverage there. I don't think Bolton had a particularly good game, and I was, you know, optimistic about him coming into week number one and excited to see him. I thought he would be, you know, the guy that would really lead the defense, and he really didn't. And there's still plenty of time for that to be turned around. There's rust to be shaken off. You know, he missed some time last year with an injury, so I think that there's, you know, still that opportunity. I just think it was a game to forget for Nick Bolton. But overall, from the secondary, I was impressed by them. It's not going to be, you know, as elite or like highlight inducing, I don't think, as when they had Legarius Sneed opposite of McDuffie. McDuffie had a good game too, by the way. I think that they do, though, have a good rotation of players that, you know, are able to get the job done in that secondary.
It was a luxury last year, and the Ravens are not going to be the team that tests the secondary the most. Let's watch Cincinnati next week. Let's watch Atlanta the week after that. Those two games will be far more, I think, difficult because of the way those offenses run. Baltimore likes to run the ball. They like to use their tight ends. You know, a lot of things that aren't necessarily challenging your corners, but wait till you have to stop T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, and they drafted a young rookie, and then you go to Atlanta, and you got to stop Drake London and Darnell Mooney. Like, I think they'll have bigger tests there. So we'll reserve judgment, or at least I will. But I thought, you know, I was happy with the way they played. Austin asks us what we were most impressed with by the Chiefs last night. For me, it's the potential of the offense, but it's what I thought coming into the year too. It's that this offense is nowhere near full strength, and it was still really, really good last night, and the sky is the limit. If they're healthy, I good luck. I don't know how you're going to defend it all, especially if they can block it up now with Sumatai. So what was I most impressed with? It's just the potential of this offense.
I was most impressed with kind of the supporting cast, I think, of the Chiefs overall. After the game was over, and I put this out on social media, I kind of did my power rankings of the four players that I was most impressed with, and none of the four were Patrick Mahomes or Travis Kelce or Chris Jones. And, you know, Mahomes was great, as usual, and he's fantastic, but we kind of get desensitized to it because he does it every single week. Travis Kelce was quiet, and Chris Jones didn't have a great game. I mean, he was fine, and
But he wasn't in a position
He wasn't in a position, but he also impacts the game even when he doesn't make major plays and things like that just by his presence on the field. But the four guys that I listed that I was most impressed with was Leo Chenal, was Jalen Watson, was Xavier Worthy, and Isaiah Pacheco. Those were the four that I was most impressed with in the game. And so, you know, of course, Worthy and Pacheco are key guys offensively, but all of them, like none of those guys, at least right now, Worthy may grow into this, but none of those guys right now are the premier star players on that team. Pacheco probably is the closest right now, and Worthy has the highest ceiling, but those four guys were who I was most impressed with. And so overall, again, it just lends more credibility to the fact that not only has Brett Veach done a masterful job over the years of taking care of the pillars of the organization, the big three, but he's also more often than not done a really good job of the supporting cast around those big three to be able to have the high impact plays, to have games where they're the ones that are kind of driving the bus and leading the team to a huge win. And so those were the four guys I was most impressed with, and overall just the supporting cast and what they did.
Yep. Just do me a favor. Put Chris Jones back at tackle. Don't put him on the end. That'd be my only complaint, really, out of the entire game. What a fun game. Didn't even matter how it ended. It was so much fun. And then we get tonight, we get another one to follow it up with Eagles Packers, which I think is going to be incredible. Another NFC potential championship preview. And then all the primetime games this week are ridiculous.
You going to watch the it Lions. On Peacock? You going to get, do you have, I don't know. If, do you have Peacock?
Because
that's a Peacock exclusive game, right?
I have a way. I have okay. a way.
Putting you on the spot there a little bit.
Yeah, I have some methods that I can utilize a little bit. But yeah, we'll watch it. We'll watch it. Nothing illegal. I don't think it's illegal.
Can I just mention, by the way, and you and I were texting about this last night, in case this is kind of a PSA, if people didn't know, if you've got fantasy football teams, and you've also got YouTube TV. They've got the brand new feature. It's incredible. Watching like your fantasy football scores on the TV screen. You can connect your account while the game is going on. I did that for the first time last night, and it was awesome. And it was just one game going on. I can't imagine when Sunday rolls around, and I've got these teams and these leagues, and I can like with my remote on TV watching. It was so cool. And I obviously feel like that's something that a lot of people will take advantage of. It changed the way that I watched the game last night. It was cool.
I'm going to have to set up a third TV downstairs now because of this. I have not tested it yet, but based on your pictures, I'm going to have a third TV in my man cave now.
I don't know how many times I miss plays in games because I'm looking at my phone, checking my scores. And if it's just up on the side of the screen, as if I'm watching Red Zone or whatever on Sunday, and it's live updating my matchups on my fantasy leagues, I mean, that's like a game changer for me.
And I need now the technology to put like all five of my betting apps on one and to track all my different crazy parlays while they get that. I'll need that. So if the powers that be could work on that also, like a screen that can hold all the apps at the same time and show you your bets. That's where I miss them. I'm like, oh, which one had that bonus that I had to, you know, jump back over to and follow
wall,
a little bit.
The wall at your house is going to look like a sports book with like screens everywhere, yeah, and tickers, yeah, and you know, all your bets and all. You're basically going to build your own sports book.
Yeah. You asked how I would, get permission from my wife. I wouldn't ask. That's how. But that's how that would have to play out. It's so funny. Speaking of, so the Worthy play, like I told everybody, I'm like, all right, I got Worthy on the first Chiefs drive. Here we go. And he got it. And I'm like dancing around and like jumping up and down. And then I couldn't remember which one I put it on. And I finally find it and I put it in a dang parlay. And I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot. I'm such an idiot because I was, you know, you're just trying to use all your bonuses and stuff. I'm like, why did I do that? But I was able to cash it out for the value of it anyway. So it didn't matter, but it was pretty big, like deflating of the balloon to see like, oh no, it was.
How about all the people that had the Ravens and took the points? And
oh, you were there. You were there.
You were right there. And then it gets overturned in the Chiefs cover.
By a toenail. Yep. You had the cover. And that's why it like doesn't bother me that I missed that game. We evaluated the game just right. Right. It's going to be close. And I think the Chiefs will win, but it'll be, you know, it'll be a couple of points either way. It's why we liked the point. No problem with that. You win some, you lose some. That's not like a misread on the game. I think we all had it right. It's just like, which side of that does it fall on? And a toenail says it falls on the Chiefs side. So there you go. We'll pick some more games coming up at the top of the hour. When we return, though, because we have pretty much all football in the second hour, we're going to spend a minute on the Royals as they get back in action. They're smack in the middle of a playoff chase. So Royals fans, stay tuned. We'll get to that. On the way out, let's do our first text giveaway. You can text the word drag right now to the short code 20357 for your chance to snag a pair of Truett and Osborne bike drag tickets at September 6th tonight, and then the 7th and 8th tomorrow through the weekend at the Kansas International Dragway, 7900 West 61st North in Mays. Good luck, everybody. That's drag to the short code 20357. Sports Daily coming right back.
Six, nine, 1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Get out to Crestview, check it out. The weather is about to be primo for a little golf. 36 holes to choose from. Get out there, take a tour of the facilities. And my wife will have plenty of tennis on tap over the next couple of days. I don't think I'll have time for golf. I'll be busy watching football, but that's also a good thing you can do at Crestview. They got a great bar and restaurant area. So give them a call. Check them out. Tell them we sent you. We're both members. Tommy and I, we both love it out there at Crestview. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Tommy, we have talked football. We talked Chiefs last night, as you'd expect. We will continue to do that. We're going to make some more picks and jump right back into it in our next segment as we start the next hour. But let's get some Royals in here. So the Royals did not play yesterday. They are a half game behind the Twins right now in both the Central, of course, and for that second wild card spot. Five games clear in the wild card, though, of Detroit and Seattle, 5.5 clear of Boston, 6.5 clear of Tampa. And they start a series with the Twins, which is a great opportunity, obviously, to try and position yourself just a little bit better in the wild card standings. You'll get Reagans, Marsh, and Waka in this series. I think you feel pretty good about that. You'll face a couple of pitchers who've been pretty good for the Twins as well. It's at home. They really have struggled in Minnesota, but it's not in Minnesota. And here we go. Is that day off going to help the Royals here? I think it will. I think getting a win going into the day off, you weren't here yesterday, Tommy, but getting a win and getting Urcig looking good in an appearance the night before are two really nice things to take with you into a day off so you can reset a little bit. And I do think there's a decent chance they're able to now settle back in and be okay.
You know, I think that part of it, too, is going to be who gets the ball for the Twins tonight. It looks like Zebby Matthews is getting the start. He's not been very good this year. It's only his fifth career MLB start. And so, you know, it's been early in his career, but at least the small sample size, he's got an ERA over 7. You know, so I think that's something that the Royals offense, it'd be a really good opportunity, I think, for them to get back on the right track offensively. And that started in the finale against Cleveland on Wednesday. They were able to, you know, get some runs across the board for the first time in a while. And so that needs to continue. That day off yesterday, you know, you posed the question, will that help them? And I think it absolutely will. One of the things that I think was important and kind of tying it back to the Chiefs a little bit, there were a handful of the guys at the game last night. Bobby Witt Jr. was at the game and MJ Melendez and, you know, a couple of other Royals were there on the sideline. Just having a little bit of a break, you know, not having to worry about, you know, the grind and performing and you can just sort of relax and be a spectator for a night. I think will pay dividends for the Royals. There was not a team in Major League Baseball that needed a break more than the Royals did on Thursday. And so if you can be rejuvenated and refreshed, Ken points out on our video stream that Hunter Renfroe is coming back off the DL this weekend. You know, he's been up and down this year for sure, but he's always a threat to go yard. And so when you can get him back in the lineup, I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination that he can replace Vinny Pasquantino in the lineup, but at least knowing that you have another threat to go deep, I think will certainly overall help that lineup from top to bottom.
Yeah, I hope Renfroe helps. It's going to be Bobby Witt Jr.
It's at least a threat, right? Like, that's the thing about Renfroe. Yeah. At least the threat is now back in the lineup.
I agree, but This thing's going to ride or die by Bobby Witt Jr. and probably to a smaller degree Salvador Perez. Like, I like what they've done to react to some very unfortunate things that have happened. But if the Royals go and do something special in the postseason, it'll be on the shoulders of Bobby Witt Jr., I think. I don't think it's likely that all of a sudden two or three guys really, you know, carry the load for this team. because you lost what made this lineup so dynamic when you lost Pasquantino. Now you've got to be able to piece it together. There's one guy on the roster who can do it all. Salvador Perez maybe a little bit too, but those guys have to be good. No matter what Renfro does, those two guys have to be good down the stretch here. So it's you get into the Twins and they have to pitch, right? Reagans is going to have to pitch in this one. No chances. Don't take it. We know that the bullpen is wounded. Whether Urcig is all the way back or he's not, the bullpen feels wounded to me.
Reagans
has been not great his last few times out, right? He hadn't gone past five innings in any of his last three starts, and two of them he gave up big old crooked numbers. So he needs to be better too. But we can't wait for that game. You'll hear it right here tonight on KFH. All right, when we come back, it's pick time. Here we go. We'll pick three college, three pro games. We'll let Jad get us caught up on how things fared last week. TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner, Paul Savage, all join us next hour. We'll have some high school football talk as well. Here we go. 10 o'clock on Fridays, always fun and crazy. We're coming right back with it on Sports Daily next.